All right. Software audits. Okay, this is another area that you need to look in your IT contract when you're reviewing it. It's coming in. Is there a provision in there for audits? Unlicensed software in the workplace has really become a major concern for a lot of companies, a lot of software companies, that is. And many are now requesting businesses to perform what we would call a software audit, in which they will imply the threat of litigation that a company submit to, an audit. And a lot of trade groups, or a couple, two primary trade groups that are out there on this issue, is the Business Software Alliance, the BSA, and the Software and Information Industry Association. Maybe some of our vendors who are logged in are members of these, which is great. But as a user, you want to be careful, because they'll investigate on their on behalf of their members, which is not necessarily a bad thing. Because in many instances, unlicensed software may become part of the organization if there's not a policy by the organization preventing employees from loading personal copies or sharing software applications. Also, businesses expand and undergo changes, and that may lead to unauthorized copying. But nevertheless, it pays to preserve your organization's rights to have a policy about this, that you don't allow unlicensed software in the workplace, and you review your IT contracts that may discuss audit rights. So this is about preserving and creating rights for you as the licensor or the licensee. I just am framing it in the licensee perspective because we all are licensees of software, whether it's your BlackBerry, your computer, or your custom-built software. It's all necessary for many of your business functions. All right, so the next slide is this issue of limitation of liability. Now, with this, you have to watch out and preserve your rights. This issue is of extreme importance. The license agreement is going to contain, 9 times out of 10, a limitation of liability. And that means that you are going to be signing and consenting, unless you negotiate the provision, signing away your rights. Now, the license agreement may contain a clause limiting incidental and consequential damages should the software fail. So that can be a major problem if those incidental and consequential damages are taken off the table. Now, the law allows the parties to agree to limit their damages. So you need to be very cautious when these limitations of liabilities, where they're talking about excluding different types of damages, you need to know what those damages are and what they mean. Now, if the one caveat that I put out there in this is that if the limitation, if the waiver is so harsh and it's deemed to have failed of its essential purpose, that's the quote, failed of its essential purpose, end quote, on the law, to provide the user or the buyer with at least a minimum adequate remedy with the courts, the courts have ruled not to enforce these provisions. They just strike them out of the agreement. And because software is governed by the UCC, the Uniform Commercial Code, then those rights under the Uniform Commercial Code govern. But some courts have upheld these limitations of liability, and I would say a majority of courts do. So you need to be very cautious, you need to be very careful, and you need to know what is being excluded in your contract and what the vendor will do should the software fail. So, you may have to agree to exclude your damages or certain damages, but you need to know, and it needs to be clear in your contract, what is that seller, licensor, vendor going to do for you if this software fails? Maybe it's repair and replace. Maybe it's come out and try to fix it after so many times. Maybe it's a refund of your money. Whatever it is, before you sign the dotted line, you need to know what the vendor will do should the software fail. Because your damages, most likely in any IT contract that you review, are going to be limited. All right, let's move on to the next section, and that is ownership of software. I just want to step back here for just a moment and reiterate. We've had some people come on since we made our first disclosure. If you have any questions, there is a nifty little function in the right-hand section of your webinar, and you can type in a question like you are BlackBerry, messengering, chatting, emailing, texting, whatever it is that how you communicate. You can do that in the right-hand side. No questions, I think, will be turned away. And if you feel like you would like to ask the questions in private, you're of course welcome and more than able to call Nick or myself, free charge about, any of the content that we're discussing on the webinar. So with that, let's move on to ownership of software. Now, in general, let's talk a little bit about ownership, because this, as I stated at the beginning, we've had some people join us since then, but this is a huge issue, and it's a common misconception. Is you think, okay, I've spent all this money on buying the software, and I own it, and my business owns it, and if we sell the business, the software goes with it. If we need to make copies, we can do that. We need to modify it, we can do that. Well, that would be true if you owned it. But almost 9 times out of 10, or 9.9 times out of 10, your IT contracts are going to say you do not own it. You are merely licensing it from the owner, from the vendor, or the person who created it. So the issue is, who owns the rights and the software at your organization? And I don't know, do you know? If you thought about all the proprietary information, and I kind of think as the systems and the software and all that is really kind of, the blood vessels that run your organization. But, unless you negotiate for those terms, you don't own it. And so that could be a problem if you go to sell your organization. You can't sell the licenses. So just a few, adjustments in a single sentence saying that the license is transferable or that they agree to allow you to own it, that can be literally, and I've worked on these cases recently, that literally can be the difference of $4.5 million, where it's non-existent now. If you had a single sentence that said that the user owns it, retains all rights, title, and interest to the property, it's a $4.5 million asset. They don't own it. So it's an important issue. So under the U.S. Copyright Act, you may own a physical copy of a book, DVD or CD, but you don't own the intellectual property inside of it or that it's comprised of. You just have a license to use it. Now, a basic rule of U.S. copyright law, which software is largely governed by, is that ownership of a physical copy of a work does not grant any ownership rights in any intellectual property embodied in the copy. So what does that mean? That's legalese, but what does that mean? That means that ownership, you may own a physical copy of something, but just because you own that book or CD, it doesn't mean you have ownership rights in what's actually comprised of. Now, most software agreements are licensed. They're not a sale, as I said, and they're not a sale of, contrary to a book, DVD, or CD, they're not a sale of the physical copy, and they're certainly not a sale of the intellectual property, all the software code that runs on there. This permits the copyright owner to restrict the licensee's ability to transfer the copy of the software to a third party. Now, most software agreements are a license or not a sale. So therefore, the vendor holds the string to the software, and you as the licensee cannot use it. You cannot resell it. You can only use it within the confines of the vendor. So, and then on that issue is sublicensing. Now, a right to sublicense allows the licensee, that is you, the vendor, you, the licensee, the user, to grant certain rights to third parties. Now, without this right in an IT contract, you may not sublicense the software to anyone else. So, this could be third-party developer, somebody else to build this code, maybe a subsidiary of your company or an affiliate. If you cannot sublicense it, you are limited to that entity or individually owning it and only using it. And that's very restrictive. So you need to be aware of these words in your IT review. Now, it looks like there is a question, so I'm going to Nick, my colleague Nick Ortel, will be fielding the questions, and I'm going ahead and take this question with Nick Ortel. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. For those of you that joined us just a few moments ago, my name is Nick Ortel. I am an attorney with the Foster Swift Law Firm as well, and I'm going to go ahead and field this question that we just received, and it asks, should you build penalties into the agreement for non-performance? Sam, do you have?
And that is an absolute yes, and we are going to get to that later in our materials, but I can say categorically you do. You want everybody invested, particularly if it's a modification or a custom build. There are financial penalties, and we'll talk about this later, but you can also have all the software code. For instance, if the question is that this person, this developer, is building a custom software program for your business, and they're not performing, or you're concerned they won't perform. What you do is you take that software code and you say, you're going to escrow this. So every time you get completed on X number of portion of this project, you're going to put it in escrow. And what that means is that if that person or developer does not perform, then in the contract, you can put a provision, as the question states, as an incentive to perform. You, the user, would obtain ownership rights to that. And then you could go out and find somebody else to finish the project. The other thing is financial penalties, put in there, and this is frequently done, particularly if you're buying hardware or software and it requires some maintenance and upkeep, is put service credits. If the custom or modified software developer is coming out and integrating it, and maybe there's a transition time till it's fully operable, and then he or she still has to come out, then what you need to do is have, maybe 5 hours of service credit time If you know you're not building it fast enough or it's not performing satisfactorily. So, you know, that way everybody's invested, whether it's monetary, whether it's ownership of the intellectual property, or whether it's, you know, service time of servicing the software or system. So that's a very good question. Should you build penalties in the agreement for non-performance? Absolutely. Absolutely. Everything's negotiable. Okay. Was there any other questions? I think if not, we'll just we'll keep moving through. Hopefully that answered your question, but if it did not, you know, you're certainly free to, you know, to write a follow-up. Okay. Next slide, we're talking about modification, and this is the clarification of rights. Now, this is a provision that can get a little sticky and a little fuzzy. So we need to be very clear and very precise. Now, the issue of ownership for licensed software is often addressed or not addressed in this issue of modification. Now, the user often assumes ownership of the modification of the software that he or she's paying for is going to be owned by them. So you have a software that you purchased, now you're having it modified or customized to your organization. So any of those, you know, specialized tweakings that are going to be occurring, you know, usually the user thinks, well, I own that because that's for my business. And what happens also simultaneously, and why this is a little sticky and fuzzy, is the vendor assumes, the person that's making those tweaks, assumes that ownership of the modifications are just really an appendage of the software, and they own it, you know, and that it's really falls under the license, and that can become very dicey. So ownership issues in a modification software, IT contract, any type of modifications, specialized enhancements, you need to know whether or not you own those. Because if you don't own them, that may be problematic, and they may charge an additional licensing fee in some instances for that. I've seen that before. So ownership rights to the original software, as well as any modifications or derivatives of that original software, should really, really be specified. All right, moving on. Liability for unauthorized changes or modifications in the software. Now, if ownership rights are not clearly defined in the agreement, in the software license agreement, the IT agreement, the licensee or user, you know, they may take some liberties with the licensed software. You know, the software isn't performing as good as it could, and the user may think, well, we can customize that software a bit or tweak it for the company's benefit. Now, that may be an unauthorized change in your agreement, and you know, you need to plan for that, or you need to be able to do that. So you need to put it in the agreement that you can do that. Or be very aware and have your IT department be very aware that you cannot do that. So there are many court cases, you know, where the licensee and the user made some adjustments to the software and was deemed to have committed copyright infringement. And it was copyright infringements, even though they adjusted the software, because the user exceeded, what we talked about at the beginning, exceeded the scope of its license by making these unauthorized modifications to the software license by the owner. So, you know, it's not a great analogy, but it would be akin, you know, to going back and rewriting, you know, the last half or last quarter of Gone with the Wind. You know, Margaret Mitchell may take some liberties with you for doing that, or certainly her estate would. So copyright infringement if you're modifying the software and it's not permitted. really a better example of that would be your business has some special payroll software, database software, and you customize it beyond the scope of the license. Well, then you're in breach of contract and you've committed copyright infringement, and you can be liable for damages for the breach of contract and damages under the U.S. Copyright Act, which is a federal claim. So you could be end up in federal court if you violate the scope of your license agreement. So understand your license agreement. Know what you're getting into. If you don't agree with it, make sure you can make some adjustments. Now, I want to move on and talk, rather, with time, we're pushing 55 minutes here. We have about 30 minutes left. I want to save some time for questions. But there's a few other topics I want to move through, and then at the very end, I want to give some, essential provisions and pointers when you guys are reviewing your IT agreements that you really need to look at. You can write them down and keep them in your drawer, but, look at them and think about them anytime an IT contract is coming over your desk because it really does matter. People make you think that it doesn't matter, and really, this stuff is the lifeblood of your business, and without it, it would shrink. Okay, so on that topic, let's talk very briefly, because it would deserve a separate webinar in and of itself, but open source software. I'm sure many of you people have heard of open source software. Open source software is software that is made available by its owner, the person that created it, to the public under what's called a quote-unquote public license. So that source code, that open source code, can be read. You can look at it, see how it's written. It can be modified. It can be redistributed by users, with very minor, exceptions and conditions. So this open source software is, in the opposite spectrum of, your standard proprietary business software that you're purchasing, because, they hold that with white knuckles. Now, this open source software, you have to be careful because, you think it's free and you can use it because it's the open source software is distributed free of charge. But it is not free of risks or obligations. Now, this is very important. So if you're using it in a corporate environment, this open source software presents issues that should be, very carefully considered. And that's really beyond the scope of this webinar. But there's a lot of great open source code out there, and there's a huge debate whether it should be closed or open. You really need to understand what open source software is, because if a company uses a single line of open source software in a proprietary product, then the open source license, that public license we talked about, that requires the company to distribute the product. The whole product must be made freely available to the public. So let's bring that home a little bit. Let's say, and it would never happen, Bill Gates incorporates open source software code into his Windows, whichever version you pick, operating system. Okay, and then he incorporates all this open source code into it, and then goes to sell it. Well, he can't sell it anymore. He absolutely is not entitled to sell that. He has to make that freely available. Well, that would never happen. So open source code, think about it. Know about it, and it does affect, it may sound it may sound sweet and easy and cheap, but understand what the public license is and understand what those restrictions are when you're dealing with open source software. It's great. There's just restrictions. All right. Let's move on from open source software now to, let's see, we're going to be moving to term of license. Now, the term of license, you know, I've broken it up into time period renewal and bankruptcy of licensor. The term is an essential provision when you review your IT contracts, because as far as it giving you rights, if you want a 5-year opportunity to use the software, you do not want an agreement or license agreement that merely provides for 6 months and then you automatically renews and you got to pay a new licensing fee. So you got to know your time period. So the term of license is the time period during which the user, you know, you're entitled to use the software. Now, that can be as short as, 1 year, 6 months, you know, you got to read the contract. But in many instances, this time period for the term of license is perpetual. And that's perpetual meaning forever. Now, if it is perpetual, the user will generally pay a one-time license fee. Now, if you license a software product for 1 year, you're probably going to have to pay a renewal fee. So you need to look at these issues, particularly, you know, if you buy software and it's perpetual and you think you've paid this one-time fee, if you have any problems with it, that is, you violated it, or the vendor decides to terminate it, you need to consult the termination provision of the contract. Every contract should and does have one, termination. But even though you have a forever license, it can be terminated. So look at your termination provision as well. All right, renewal. Renewal is important. A user must be certain that the initial license term does not expire after a fixed period without the right to renew the software, at least at a reasonable price. Now, renewal is important if the license is not perpetual. So we talked above time period perpetual. If it's not perpetual in your IT contract review, note to self, not perpetual, we need to understand what the renewal is, and we probably right now before we sign the contract and get waist deep into this should establish what the renewal fee is in a year, 2 years, or 3 years, or 5 years from now. Or if the vendor won't do that, put a cap that it shall not exceed, 4% or CPI or whatever it is. So you don't become hooked and dependent on this software. It's good for a year or 2 years, and then they re-up you for a new licensing fee. It's a way to save yourself some money. Be very clear about your rights and responsibilities under the contract before you sign it. And it just makes for a much better relationship between the vendor and the licensee. So the other issue, this bankruptcy of licensor, I threw that in there because, our present economic situation, but it's very real. Bankruptcy, that provision should be in an IT contract. And let me tell you why. A bankruptcy, if a company is insolvent, if the software builder or the vendor, becomes insolvent and no longer ceases to do business, and you have a contract with him or her or the entity to maintain that software, do updates to that software, do enhancements to that software, and they become bankrupt, they're no more. So all of a sudden that $800,000 piece of software that you bought or that system and they're no longer capable of servicing it, well, guess what? If you don't own the rights to it, which usually you don't, then what do? It goes back and it ends. You know, the software becomes obsolete and you've wasted $800,000. Now, a single sentence can change that. A single sentence can say that upon insolvency or bankruptcy of the vendor or licensor, the intellectual property rights to the software shall transfer, and maybe they're on a, as we said, non-exclusive basis, so you're not the only one that gets to use it, on a non-exclusive perpetual basis. So you have it now forever. Now you don't have it all to yourself, but you now have it. You can bring somebody else in. You can have them modify it. They're not going to, get you in trouble by violating the scope, because you're not going to be an unauthorized modification. So you're not going to be sued for copyright infringement. You're not going to be sued for damages. So essential provision upon insolvency or bankruptcy of the licensor or vendor, rights go to you, the licensee. If you are very careful in your negotiations, that is a provision that usually you don't have a problem for, and sometimes you can even appeal to their ego, and if they start stammering, you can say, well, are we having financial concerns? Maybe we need to find another vendor if you think that you will be going into bankruptcy or potential insolvency proceedings.